Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 5 of the Sober Butterfly podcast. I am your host, Mimi Molina. This week's episode is actually all about breaking generational curses, and I sat down with someone that I truly admire. Nicole over at the Sober BFF on Instagram is just incredible. Her story is so powerful, and I learned so much from her. I've actually taken away some resources and some advice that she's given. Nicole and I have many things in common, especially this idea of not wanting alcohol addiction to be our fate. I really hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. Let me know by leaving a review. Bye.
Hello, Nicole, and welcome to the Sober Butterfly podcast. How are you this lovely afternoon?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. So just for the listeners at home, Nicole, you were my second ever sober spotlight. And so back in January, I really wanted to highlight women, people of color, and just embrace their recovery and their journey to recovery. And your profile stood out to me. I know that you're a sober coach. I know that you're a mom. I know that you're based in New York. There's like a light that you have that really shone. Is that a thing? Word? It shined through, and I really wanted to highlight you. And I also felt like a really big connection with your story, especially like you shared briefly for the spotlight, and it seemed to me like there were generational curses that were being broken. And I know that you're a mom. I'm not a mom, but what really stood out to me was the idea that you were doing this, like a big part of your why wasn't just for you, but it was for your, I believe you have a daughter. And so that stood out to me too, because I come from a family riddled with addiction, and I've seen just how insidious it can be and how difficult it can be. So my first question actually for you, what was your relationship like with alcohol growing up? Like, what did it look like in your life in terms of your household and some of the associations, the early associations that you had with it in the beginning?
Sure. So my childhood was a little complicated. I'm actually adopted. So my birth mom was on drugs and drinking and just wasn't in a good place at all. So I was actually adopted by almost like a second cousin raised me, and I was very young when that happened. So I think I'm learning that reality, even though I didn't have any type of a real relationship with my birth mom, I definitely felt like she chose drugs and alcohol over everything. So I think that definitely put something in my mind that, like, I don't know, it's a bad taste for drugs and alcohol in my mind. Right. And then my mom, who raised me, suffers with drinking pretty heavily. And in my childhood, it wasn't quite so bad, but there was like a lot of parties, a lot of seeing people drunk, and it didn't bother me as much as a child. But as I grew into adulthood, I'm like, everyone's priority shouldn't be chasing the party and chasing the next drink. I found Al-Anon to kind of deal with my relationship with my mom and trying to make that better and understand her drinking. And in turn, I was like, okay, you know what? I can't change her. But maybe if I look at myself, I can make sure that, like, I'm not passing these same things on to my daughter, and I can maybe show her something that's different. So, you know, growing up, there was just a lot of parties, a lot of drunkenness. Luckily, you know, no type of like violence or anything like that, but definitely just a lot of partying, a lot of alcohol use.
I connect with that so much. So my family is Caribbean. I want to ask about your background too, but my family, British Jamaican. And so growing up, we had tons of parties, and I thought it was normal to drink for every social occasion. And I do mean every. I'm talking like baby showers, funerals, weddings, of course, like just people coming over for Christmas parties. And I really thought that was the norm until I got a little bit older, and I would, you know, go to my friends' houses for like maybe an occasion. And I'm like, where's the alcohol? I don't understand. Why is no one drinking? What kind of party is this? I used to think it was cultural, and a part of me still does think that the Caribbean culture very much embraces like the party lifestyle, and like alcohol is connected to that. However, in terms of my immediate family, I recognize that some suffered more from addiction, drinking specifically, than others. It wasn't just the party, right? It was like behind closed doors.
Right.
And I think as a child, because you don't know any different, like your environment is very much what you experience, I also didn't understand the full complexity of it and like was desensitized to it. So like similar to what you said, like you were turned off by the idea, I wasn't adopted, but this idea that like your birth mother struggled with addiction and that was distasteful, as I imagine it would be. My mother also suffered from addiction and that was distasteful for me. And I hated alcohol towards like my late teenage years, but also used alcohol destructively. So it was like this path that I was on that like I knew it was bad and I saw the evils of it, but yet I was following in the exact same footsteps. So I don't have experience with Al-Anon, but like I love that you were like not necessarily seeking to change yourself in the beginning. It was like an accidental path, I guess, that you were on. Do you find that there was any connection between your background and like, if you don't mind sharing what your background is as well, I'd be very interested to learn a little bit more about that.
Sure. So that's complicated in itself too. Like should have been like a Lifetime movie. But my birth mom never said who my dad was. And she was living a lifestyle of drugs and alcohol and prostitution and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I definitely had the question, like, who is my dad? But my birth mom died when I was really young.
I'm sorry.
And Nicole. she just never said, you know, so I grew up actually not knowing, you know, and I would have a lot of, well, what are you? And I hate that question. I still, to this day, it's like, what does it matter? You know,
of course.
But it's like, I'm so many more things. Like,
absolutely.
You know, I'm a mom and I'm a woman. Like, it doesn't matter. But I think it was just an insecurity because I didn't know. So we assumed that I was some type of Hispanic my whole life.
Okay.
And then when I was 31, I'm going through these Facebook messages, you know, some of them get filtered if you don't know them. And most of them are men, obviously, but there was a few from women. And one was a message from my sister that I never knew that I had. And she was like, you know, I was just wondering, was my birth mom such and such? Mm-hmm. My dad asked me to reach out to you and I think that you're my sister. And I'm like,
wow.
Well, what? Like, what are you talking about? So that was now 7 years ago.
Okay.
We took a DNA test and come to find out my father is Black. And I think that was probably very obvious to a lot of people, but it wasn't just whatever, you know, I'm looking at my sister. I'm like, so what are you? Are you Dominican? Like, what are you? She was like, nah, girl. So I, you know, embraced a new family, which has also been hard. And I think that, you know, my birth dad as well, I don't have a relationship with him either. You know, he wasn't a part of my life as a child because the same thing with my birth mom, like they were into some bad things. And again, in my mind, I'm like, well, you chose drugs and alcohol over a child? Like, that's not right. But in the same time, you know, I was also abusing alcohol in not a good way either, but it definitely put that distaste in. But yeah, so that's my ethnicity background, newly embraced. I celebrated by drinking some Hennessy and trying to embrace my roots. That's pretty much where the background comes in. So some of it is new, and I think I struggled a little bit even with like identity before that and after that. You know, it's definitely a different thing.
I apologize if I came across crude or just desensitive. This platform, I celebrate women in recovery, period. But I especially gravitate towards people that I feel like I can connect with a little bit in terms of like race and ethnicity and background. When you said like you grew up in like a household that like celebrated a lot of things and partying, I assume Caribbean too. So I was like, oh, maybe there's a connection there. So I hope, just so I'm clear, I hope I didn't offend you anyway.
No, not at all. Not at all. And that's a lot of people just like, I guess we look how we look, you know what I mean?
Right.
So some people I was like, yeah, can you believe it? Yeah. My dad's actually Black. They're like, duh. But yeah, so I, you know, it's a very interesting story, but I think all of it plays in. And just like you said, like, it's crazy because I haven't come across a lot of people that have that same connection where it's like, I saw drugs and alcohol negatively impacting people in my life. And I had like such a distaste because I felt like I came second, you know, I met a lot of people that speak that same thing. And you literally said the exact same thing as how I felt for very many years, which is, it's cool. It's a cool connection to have.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, so understanding, I should say, the toxicity that exists in addiction, but then finding yourself in a place where you're not using alcohol in a healthy or responsible way, what led you to cope or use alcohol in a way that was negative or not helping your life in a positive way. Not that I think alcohol can help your life in a positive way, but right. you know what they say, like normal drinkers versus, you know, maybe taking it to the next level and abusing alcohol. So I'm wondering, was there a particular point in your life when you realized that you were drinking unhealthily, and what was that place and what did it look like for you?
You know, I don't know when I came to the realization that like it was a problem. Mm-hmm. It just was, you know, I didn't drink heavy until I was in my 20s. I didn't really start drinking until I was 19, but that's how I grew up. Like, mm-hmm. just like you said, like, oh, somebody died, we're going to drink about it.
Yeah.
Your boyfriend broke up with you, we're drinking about it. Like, yeah. it's just what we did. And I still, to this day, I struggle sometimes even with my friends who do still drink, which is totally fine. Like, if they're having like the worst day ever, I'm like, well, do you want to go out? Like, I'll be your designated driver. You can yeah. drink and I won't, you know? I still think that that was the way that I learned how to cope with everything, you know? And then as the years went on, I mean, I would always have instances where I would overdrink and black out or fall asleep in random places. And, you know, all of those horrible things, you know, wake up, lay out of my bed and vomit because mm-hmm. I literally drank that much. But it wasn't until like the last few years where my anxiety and my depression were so high. I think from finding new family, I had some traumatic things and big emotional things happen that I just was drinking to not feel and yeah. blacking out literally all of the time. And then waking mm-hmm. up and feeling so anxious and even more depressed. And alcohol is a depressant, right? Like, we know that, we've learned that, but it just didn't click for me. It really didn't until I started doing Al-Anon. I put myself into therapy and saw a psychiatrist, but until then I just really wasn't making that connection.
I relate to that too, because it was like I chose to have people in my life who also drink in excess. So it made it easier for me to trick myself into believing that this was a normal way to drink. And I have to break those patterns too. You mentioned like if a girlfriend calls you like, I'm having the worst day, and like your instinctual yeah. response is like, let's go out, like I'll be DD as a sober person. But like I did that too. I was in Costa Rica the other day, and tell me why I found myself buying girls, basically they were legal age, but buying them drinks at the bar, like to be cool. I also felt like a little uncomfortable because I was the oldest person there, but still like this idea that like, why is that my natural instinct to like help someone or like feel like I'm doing them a favor by including yeah. alcohol? I think it's learned behavior if we really think about it. I want to break that pattern. I think that's something that I'm gradually having to sit in the uncomfortability and not just like respond with this idea that like, oh, let's drink, that's what you should do.
Me too. I actually just had a girlfriend who had her boyfriend had a really bad like catastrophic accident that happened, and he actually passed away. But before he passed, I was like, what can I do to like help her? You know what I mean? And the normal thing would be to drop off a bottle of vodka. Like, that's what you do. But I don't want to support that. And especially in a high moment of like, you know, this isn't just a breakup. Like this is kind of intense. So I sent her like a care package, you know, like a cute pillow, a face mask, some like lip glosses, a sleep pad. So I too, like I don't want to be the person that encourages somebody to drink. I'm definitely not encouraging, but in those moments, because that's all that I've ever known, is that's kind of what you do. But there are so many other outlets and so many other things that you can do. But yeah, I'm definitely also trying to find a way to be supportive of my friends that's not like, you know, hey, this is what I've always done, because it doesn't work.
It does not work. No. Only so long that you can trick yourself. Can you talk a little bit about Al-Anon for maybe viewers or listeners at home who don't have an understanding about what Al-Anon is? I've never been to an Al-Anon meeting, although I should definitely go to one. Can you talk to me about that and also how it helped you?
So like I said, I struggled with my mom's relationship with alcohol for a while. I mean, it was affecting our relationship really, really badly. And I didn't know what to do. Like you can't argue somebody into seeing things your way or into changing their lives. So a friend of mine reached out to one of her friends who had gone through AA, actually. She reached out to me and said, you know, you should maybe try Al-Anon. Al-Anon is the like sister program for the families of alcoholics, and it could be addicts as well. But so that the alcoholic will go to AA, and then they'll often encourage family members to go through Al-Anon. They work the same like steps, like the same 12 steps. They try to get you to kind of go through those same steps. But basically, you know, I wanted to better my relationship with my mom. I wanted to let go of anger and resentment and just put up some boundaries. And so, yeah, this acquaintance had said to me, you know, if you want me to go to a meeting with you, I will. It was during COVID and it was all online. So it ended up being a good opportunity for me. I didn't know that I could walk into a room. So they have like a great app and you just log in, just like a FaceTime. And I felt less alone. I felt like there were a lot of people that dealt with the same things. It teaches you to, instead of focusing on the person that you love that is abusing drugs or alcohol, to kind of look at yourself and your responses. And in turn, obviously, it grew into me learning that I myself could make some really positive changes, you know, and make sure that I wasn't putting these negative feelings that I had from not, and it wasn't just my mom, you know, it came from friends, it came from relationships and seeing other people's relationships with alcohol. I could just change it for me and make sure that I wasn't putting that onto anybody else. So I think that it was instrumental in me learning more about myself and really choosing to want to make some healthy changes and to quit drinking myself.
That's beautiful. Had anyone up until that point said to you, Nicole, I'm concerned about your drinking?
Not very directly. Like I was in a long-term relationship with a man that drank a lot. And I often was saying to him, like, you need to stop drinking. And he one day was like, so do you. Like, you drink just as much as I do. Like, we're doing this together. Yeah, like, maybe you should look at yourself. You know, you're the one that blacks out. Because he was a very composed drinker, you know, he didn't get angry. He, you know, was a good time and he could handle himself, where I was like all over drunk and yelling and embarrassing myself. So he said something, and you know, there were some instances where, you know, where you would black out and end up with bruises, and the next day, you know, have these conversations and say, oh my God, I'm not drinking this weekend, like I need to take it easy. So I think I had a lot of discussions like that, but not ever like a serious, you know, everybody that I was around was doing pretty much the same thing. So there wasn't really anybody to say, maybe you should think about this. And luckily, you know, I never got a DWI. I made it to work. You know, I was for the most part in control of my life. I just was heavily, heavily trying to numb myself, which doesn't make it any better. But we often think like, if you don't have a DWI and you're making it to work and you're not drinking in the morning, you don't have a problem. And that's not the case.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I came very close to getting a DWI, but somehow was able to get myself out of it, which is a shame because I deserved it. But yeah, to your point, like those glaring signs, if you don't have those big warnings, sometimes it's easy to be in denial even longer. And I think that can be even more dangerous sometimes than like maybe if I had gotten a DWI when I was at that time 22, I would have saved myself a whole heap of years of struggle of addiction. Let's fast forward to the positive. So you're sober and you've been sober coming up to a year, which is really exciting. Yep, congratulations. And so what would you attribute has been your greatest ally in your sobriety and what's really helped you stay consistent on this road to recovery?
Honestly, Instagram. I feel like I didn't even realize that there was a whole community. Like I come from Buffalo. I sent you a link earlier about how like we're the biggest drinking, like sports fanatic team, like the Bills Mafia, like we just go hard. That's what we do. It's everywhere. I didn't have anyone around me that wasn't drinking. So I don't know what popped up one day. I was doing Al-Anon and there was like an ad. I don't even think it was an ad, but somehow in my Explore, the book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober.
Yeah, it's a great one.
And I saved it. I like screenshotted it. I saved it. And I was like, well, that's cool that was on Instagram. And I don't know what I searched, but I was like, oh my God, there's this whole community. Like, this is great. Like, there's all these people that are like living their lives and they're flourishing and they're having a good time. Like, it's not sad. It's not depressing. Mm-mm. They're still having a good time. They're living their lives. I didn't see any of that in real life. Now I do. I've been connected with like local people. But honestly, the online community through Instagram, I think, was incredibly helpful to me. So was it like I journaled. I lost a lot of friends in the very beginning. I isolated myself because I was like, I just got to figure this shit out. Like, I have to figure it out. And I also saw a psychiatrist and got put on an antidepressant, which I needed. And I think I needed that and therapy. And that came first.
Of course.
So I think I don't think I would have gotten to looking at myself if I didn't do those things first. I wish that I would have a little bit sooner. But yeah, I think Instagram, I think this whole community of people that are living their lives and showing it, the good, the bad, the ugly, has been so helpful. It's given me hope. It's given me inspiration. It sounds so corny, like, oh, Instagram saved my life. It's definitely not like that, but it helped. I needed to see that there was another side of alcohol.
You don't have to say it, girl. I will say it for you. Instagram saved my life, okay? It saved my life because... like you mentioned, it's this idea that people are living loud and proud in their sobriety. And I'd never seen anything like that before in my life. In the beginning, it's like there's so much shame, obviously, connected to and stigma, at least for myself, like that was connected mm-hmm. to addiction. And once I stopped, and that's what I was going to say earlier, once I stopped bargaining, because you do that bargaining in the beginning where it's like, okay, well, you know, you mentioned that your boyfriend at the time was like right back at you. Like, maybe you should watch your drinking. And so then you're like, oh, like not me, or I'll just, you know, not get blackout next week. But once I got past that phase of like, okay, acceptance, like I think I actually have a problem that needs to be dealt with, it was isolating. So I connect with you 100% there. Like I felt disconnected from the rest of the world. I was like, no one understands me. Because no one did in my immediate circle at the time understand what I was going through. So I was like, bye for now, peace. And I lost friends too. But sober Instagram gave me hope. So I commend you on acknowledging that Instagram helped you in a way. And that book, The Joys of Being Sober. The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I listened to it in Audible, but I think I'm going to throw that back because it's such a good read. And I think that one deals with, if I'm correct, like systems and routines, like more like a how-to, because I think that's helpful, right? Did you find anything from that book helpful that you follow to this day?
I did. A big part of, I think, the drinking too was the anxiety and the depression. I didn't have a daily routine. If I was depressed, I just wouldn't get out of bed. I wouldn't brush my teeth. I wouldn't, like, none of that. Mm-hmm. So when I decided to quit drinking and I was in like this isolation, I hated everybody. You know, I was mad at my friends. I was mad at my ex-boyfriend. I was like, I'm just focusing on myself. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, let's do like a skincare thing. Like, I never did any of that. I went to sleep.
And your skin is glowing. Sorry to cut you off. I was literally looking at your skin. Like, because I'm working on mine. Thank I was like, you. Her skin is like a donut, like glazed donut Thanks. Over here in a good way, of course.
Somehow, I don't know how it remains so good, but I started to, like, you know, in the morning have a set routine. I started to go to the gym, but the night routine was really it for me. I would journal. I would write down what I was grateful for. Those things that I always thought were so corny and so cheesy, and it's not going to make a difference. It did. Mm-hmm. It did. It gave me something to look forward to. I would be down in the dumps about whatever, and I wouldn't clean up my mess. I would have clothes thrown everywhere. I wouldn't clean. And I found that, like, okay, if I get myself into this routine and clean up a little bit at night, I'm setting my tone for the next day, and it helped. The routines, the journaling were things that I learned from that book that I took. Some days I go off path, and that's what she talks about. Like, she didn't brush her teeth that night. Like, sounds disgusting, but I didn't wash my face at night. I didn't wash my face in the day. Like, you know, I would shower or whatever, but some of those simple things just made it more like you focus on that and you're not focused on drinking, not drinking, whatever other things. And it sounds so small, but it was huge. I mean, she wrote a whole book on it. That was a big part of it.
Right.
I found it to just be great, and it helped so much.
It helps when people can be so honest about their low points, because I've been there too, where I was either so hungover or just depressed, even if I wasn't hungover, that it's like, what's the point of taking off my makeup or like doing any type of routine? And it gives you purpose when you have a routine, but it also gives you a sense of accomplishment when you're able to check off even the most mediocre task. It's like, I did something. Like, okay, great. I set a goal for myself. Check, done. And there's something really powerful about that. I really believe in systems as well now, because I'm like, no wonder why you were so stressed and anxious and depressed. We were going like aimlessly through life, like literally just like floating and then being overwhelmed. And then when you're overwhelmed, of course, what do you want to have? A drink. So it just didn't make sense. And I lived so much of my life like that. Yeah, I wanted just to circle back to like the loss part when you felt like you were in isolation a little bit. I'm wondering, at this time when you decided to get serious about your sobriety, where was your daughter in this? Like, how did she feel? Did she communicate with you, or has she communicated to you since about her feels? Did she pick up on any sense of, okay, mom is going through something right now?
I think because I had such a hard time with my mom's drinking, I was always very conscious of not like drinking a ton at home. So she didn't see a lot of me like being super drunk or anything like that. But she saw, I mean, right? Like, I think it's normal to see people drink and to occasionally see somebody drunk. But I remember she made a comment the one day. I had had a girlfriend sleep over and we like went out. She was here with my mom. My mom was in town and we had gone out, and then we came home and we like did shots before we went to bed. And I remember her like repeating that to me. Like, she was like, all right, are you and your friend gonna like do shots again before you go to bed? And I'm like, oh, cringe. Oh, God. Yeah. So I've been really open and honest with her that I was quitting. And she actually has made some statements. Like, we went to the zoo and the guy's like, the beer tent's over there. And she's like, my mom's sober. Like, she doesn't anything to do with that. So she thinks that it's cool, but I don't think that she knows that I was like abusing alcohol really, really badly. I mm-hmm. think that without saying, she has seen my mom come and my mom drink, and she has seen me and my mom fight about my mom's drinking.
So
I think there's more bigger conversations to be had, but she definitely knows like mom is sober, mom does not drink. Mm-hmm. She thinks that it's cool. Like, we went on vacation shortly after I quit drinking. Like, 2 months later, we went to Universal Studios, and I just thought to myself, like, there's not gonna be a picture of me with like a glass of wine. None of her memories are gonna be, and then mom was drinking, or we had to stand in line for mom to get a drink. Like, mm-hmm. that just isn't gonna be even minusculely any part of the story. And not that she's going to reflect back that way, but when I look back at my childhood, that was a part of it. And I'm happy to say that like I'm not doing that. So I hope that she sees it more. And I'm in such like this clear headspace that it's like, Nicole, you are giving her such a different view mm-hmm. of life. And I think I'm like, what if I did drink casually? Like, I don't think that I could, but even if I could, like, I don't want to, because I think showing her that I can do all the things that I did before, we can have the same amount of fun, but your mom's not getting drunk. Like, I think it's just such a gift to give to myself, but a gift to give her, to just show her something that you and I both, I guess, really didn't have growing up.
Absolutely. Can I ask how old your daughter is now?
She's 13.
13. I got drunk for the first time, not to scare you, this is not about your daughter, but I got drunk for the first time at 13. Yeah. And the crazy part is I blacked that memory out. I interviewed my cousin and she was there for that. She reminded me. It's like literally that was a lost memory for me, which makes sense because I blacked out. But it came back to me and I was like, damn, that is scary. So the first time I really tasted alcohol without adult supervision, because I grew up also just being allowed to sort of like, oh, sip on this, like you just try a little bit. And the first time I ever tried alcohol on my own, I got blackout drunk. So if that's not foreshadowing, I don't know what is. As a mom, and I'm curious because one day I'd like to have kids, I want to show them through my lifestyle, like, hey, mom is still cool. Mom is still amazing. She's sober, right? So I think that tells the most. That's the best way to show your kids. But I'm also curious, like, how do you plan dealing with alcohol or substances as your daughter gets older? And like, what message would you have for moms or parents out there who may be wondering the same thing? Like, what do I do? Like, how can I shield my child, but also be maybe realistic about peer pressure that kids nowadays face?
I'm hoping that I don't have to have too many of these conversations for a little while.
Of course.
And I know with my mom, like I remember having, I don't know if it was high school graduation. I graduated when I was 17. And I remember she let us have like a pina colada, like something real fruity, not a lot of alcohol. But she was under the mindset of like, if you want to try and drink, I'd rather it be here, because kids are going to do what they want to do, right? Like it is what it is. I'm experiencing with my daughter now, even just, you know, she wanted to get on Instagram, she snuck to get on Instagram, that having like open and honest communication with her, at least with those things, has been the best. I find now that she's sharing more with me. If I'm not just like, you're not allowed to do A, B, and C, or you're going to be in trouble. If we have open conversation, it seems like she tells me more.
Yes.
And I think that she's also seen, she's at the age where she can come and like hang out. So she's seen me go to like a pool party at a friend's house where my friend might have, you know, a White Claw or two and mom's not. So I'm hoping that I can continue to show her that and open it up. Like, just because the person next to you is drinking doesn't mean that you have to. And, you know, you can still have a good time, especially when you're with your child. Yeah, I'm just hoping I can show her differently and that mom's still having a good time and really just be that role model. I don't think that everybody has to not drink. I wish everybody didn't drink, but yeah, I know same. That's not, I know it's not realistic. So I do think that some people can moderate, and it's not, it's never healthy, but like, I just want her to at least see her mom is one person that is not drinking and is still living her best life. Absolutely. And is actually much, much happier and a better person. You know, I'm not as stressed out. I feel like I don't yell anymore. I was such a yeller.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can you just not do that? Like, I don't want to yell today. You're going to bring me there. Before I'd be like, rah! And I try to tell her with other things too. Like, you know, her friend, they were going on like a boat or something. She was on vacation and there was, it was in the ocean and there was a slide and she was like, I'm kind of scared. I'm like, well, if you don't want to do it, like, you don't have to do it. I don't care who else is doing it. You don't have to. You're a strong, independent young woman, and you do what you want to do. You don't have to do what your friends are doing. So I'm trying to teach her that with other things, and I hope it pushes on to drugs and alcohol, and I hope that, you know, we teach our children, and I've said this with other things, you know, if you get yourself into a situation, you call mom, and mom will come and get you. And mom, at 1 a.m., if you're at a party, guess what? Mom's not going to be drunk. Mom's going to be able to get in her car and come and get you.
There's so much beauty and power in that.
It's big. It's definitely big when you come from such a place. And my mom, too, like, you know, my grandma, so my mom that adopted me, her mom, was, I guess, a raging alcoholic. And she was, like, really nasty and horrible to my mom. And I'm sure that that's where my mom got a lot of that. When I was young, though, my grandma was my world because she was sick and she wasn't drinking. And she, you know, I got to know the great side of her, and she died when I was very young. But my mom has a lot of trauma from her mom, you know, and I see that too. It's a crazy thing. And I wish that my mom could have broken that for herself and found some healthy ways to cope, but I'm glad I'm breaking it. You know, yes. I can see the pain that my mom has from watching her mom drink, you know, and I have some of those same pains, but I'm just glad that I'm able to somehow change it.
I think sometimes it's interesting to see the patterns, and like, that's why I was so like hell-bent on like, I don't want this to be my reality, because I see how deep it runs in my family. I love that you're teaching your, obviously, like, your daughter through your experiences and your lifestyle now. And I also believe in positive peer pressure. Like, you're telling her, like, for example, she doesn't have to go on that scary ride that she's not comfortable with. And like, the hope is that, you know, her choices can also positively impact maybe her friends or other people that she's around as well. In the beginning, I felt very alone, like I said, in my choice to become sober, because a lot of people I knew were still drinking. But then what ended up happening is now some of my closest friends are like, oh, I think I'm not going to drink anymore. I think I'm going to take a break. And I'm just like, wow. And I'm not going to give myself like full credit here, but I think largely when people see positive change, there's something really big about that. So like, being the person that maybe the outcast in the beginning can potentially inspire other people as well.
Yeah. So I love. So that. I have to tell you, and it's so funny. I'm going to show you too. So I quit drinking, and I was open with my friends, like, you know. And I think people don't know either how to really, like, your drinking friends don't know how to be supportive. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. You don't know what you need from them. Like, all of those relationships are really hard. But one of my best friends randomly came over. She was on the other side of town. I'm not close to her. Called me one day and was like, hey, are you home? I have something for you. And I'm like, that's really random. Like, okay. And she showed up and she had like a little gift bag. There was like some bills stuff in it. Just a little. I was like, what is this for? And she got me this card, and I brought it over here hoping that maybe it would come up. So she got me this card.
So cute.
And it says, I'm probably going to cry. Sorry. I just wanted to tell you how proud I am of you. Your strength to take these steps in your life are admirable. Don't forget that if you fall, you can always get up, and I support you no matter what. It was big, and she came and she was like, what made you come to this decision? And I didn't understand why she was asking me. Like, I was glad that she was asking me. I was glad that it wasn't just, we're not going to talk about it.
Right.
And then I went to go see her a few weeks later, and I was like, do you want me to pick you guys up like White Claw? Like, we're watching a Bills game. Like, everybody drinks during a Bills game. Mm-hmm. She was like, no, nah. I'm like, okay. And then when I got there, she was like, we just haven't been drinking. And she, to this day, we're like a month and a half apart. But yeah, she just a couple of days ago celebrated 9 months. I'll be hitting 10 months. So it was like, I needed to see somebody do it. And like, you were that person for me. It was huge, because that was my drinking friend. Like, we would go out and get hammered and put ourselves in horrible situations. We would fight. It was a positive influence just to see somebody say, like, I just didn't have it around me. She didn't have it around her. I mean, I'm sure you get the same thing. Now I get messages from people that will say, like, hey, how did you do it? I'm thinking about, you know, whatever other things. But it means a lot when it's somebody that is close to you, you know,
that you personally know.
I never would have thought I would be here. I definitely didn't think she was going to be here either, but she's flourishing and it's been great to see. And it's cool to be like inspiring to somebody else.
That's beautiful. Sometimes if you don't know better, then you can't do better. You're a Leo, right?
I am.
I'm a fire sign too. I'm an Aries. There's definitely leadership. If you believe in horoscopes, like we're like leaders and like forces to be reckoned with. None of us really had like examples in our life. So I don't know what clicked for me one day, because there were many times in my life when I should have figured it out. But when I did, I never, like you said, I never thought I'd be here. Now that I'm here, I'm helping other people. And like the relationship that you had with your friend, very similar to one of my close friends who's recently quit drinking, because we would get in the nastiest fights and it was always alcohol induced. And then it was always like a haze next day. Well, you said this, or did you say that? Or did I say that? Like, what was I mad about? So now it's like, it's just beautiful to be in this place where like, the positive peer pressure. It's like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I also, something you said, Nicole, just really was so beautiful to me, because I felt like you gave people grace. You said like, you don't know in the early stages of your sobriety what you even need from other people.
Yes.
And that's so true. And I'm so glad you said that, because I didn't know what I needed, but yet I was in my feels, like I was in my feelings, because I'm like, you just don't understand me. You don't support me. You're not really my friend. And some people aren't, you know, keeping it real, weren't really my friend. But like, I'm talking like my core friends, like I was deep in my feelings. Sometimes I would just be like, you're not being a good friend. But I wasn't fully communicating what I needed, or really communicating anything at all. It was just like, be gone, like kind of thing. And I'm so glad that like I've gotten to this place now, because I can be very clear about what I need, which is for me, I need people to not ask me if I'm going to drink again or when I'm going to drink again. I need people to support me in my choices and not make me feel like I'm a weirdo because I'm not drinking, because I try not to cast judgment on people that I personally think do have a drinking problem. This is leading up to my next question for you, because I'm learning more about the landscape of Buffalo. So I need people to like not invite me to places where it's going to be a shit show in terms of like people are going to be drunk majorly. That
don't
doesn't make me
comfortable.
Thank you for the heads up. I will not be doing that.
That's actually the last time that I drank.
Okay.
A few weeks before that, I didn't drink because I was leading to this way. But then it was a friend's birthday and we were going to a Bills game. I'm like, well, I'm not going to not drink at a Bills game. So I won't be going to any Bills. I don't even like Bills games. Like, I'm such a Bills fan, but I don't like the games because they're rowdy. Like, I would have to drink to not be so anxious that something bad was going to happen. But yeah, don't go to a Bills game.
Okay. Yeah. That's my question. Like, so what do you do for fun?
I isolated myself for such a while and just like sat home and did the Quitlet. And, you know, then I started going to the gym. But now I'm starting to like venture out and trying to do the same things that I did, just without alcohol. I had an invite recently from a friend of mine that I would go out and drink and party with. And then he invited me to go boating.
Okay.
And I was like, did he forget that I don't drink anymore? Like, where the hell is it gonna go? And he's like, no, like, you've always been a good time. Like, I know you're still gonna be a good time. It meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But I did. I went on the boat and still had a great time. I just didn't drink. I brought my whatever flavored water that I was drinking of the moment. You know, I go through like the Perrier peach, and you know, I try to find something like fun to bring with me. Now it's becoming like even more through Instagram. I was connected with local people who also don't drink. And there's a few of them that actually work in bars, and
they work in bars.
They work in bars. Whoa. And they've actually created like mocktails, like put mocktails on menus. And there's one guy that like goes around to different places and he will, you know, share who's making mocktails, where they're good. So now I've had a lot of fun going to places. Like, there's a new place in the city of Buffalo. It's a really swank place, and they have a 13 cocktail list, and 9 of them they'll make non-alcoholic. And they put that right on there. And so I go, and I can go with my friend that's drinking, and she can have one with alcohol, and I can have one without. And I don't feel like I'm just drinking like a Shirley Temple or I don't know, a soda with a lime, like whatever. So I still have a good time, and somehow like it's like, was it all in my mind? Like I don't know, but like I drink my little mocktail and I'm still having a good time. Like, play the Drake, let's dance, let's have a good time without having the alcohol. So I'm trying to find more places that have those mocktails and go to those places and try to just do the same things that I would do without blacking out, knowing that I can drive. And I'm having a really good time with that. Just being comfortable in my own skin, I'm doing the same things that I was doing without alcohol. I couldn't do that probably 6 months ago, but now I can. It's changing in a positive way. I think there's places in this city that are now saying that even though you don't drink, we still want you to come. We want you to have a good time. We're being inclusive to you. Seeing it more and more, and it makes me really happy. It makes me feel like I can still do all the things that I did before and not feel secluded, not feel like the outcast.
Yeah, we want to pay for overpriced drinks too, damn it.
Yes, give like, me that $8 grapefruit.
Right, please. Like, come on. Like, don't you want these coins? Anyway, I think there's almost like a cycle that we go through. So early stages of sobriety, I hear a lot of people say that they isolate. And I have the saying that my girlfriend told me, isolation for preparation. Like, you're preparing for something big, like a big life change. So there's a sense of isolation, and then it's like a loss of identity in a way. It's like, okay, well, who am I? Like, am I an addict? Am I still the same person? What does she like to do? So it's like the sense of like, okay, yeah, like, can I do this? Can I do that? And you're testing the waters. And then as you tend to grow and feel more confident in your sobriety, you venture out more. As you grow, you are reclaiming your identity. And I find that I'm pretty much the same person as I was before, just Nadine 2.0 is a better version of her former self. She still loves to do a lot of the things that she did before, but now she's doing them better and without a hangover the next day. Like, that's pretty much it. But I don't like to be around drunk people. I'm just going to be real with you. Like, I can be around people that drink and not feel tempted. I don't feel any type of way if you're drinking in front of me. But as soon as they cross that threshold and they are drunk, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. I had a night last month. I had a friend in from Vegas, and we, you know, she's the one to like go out and bebop around, which, okay, I can do that too. But by the time like 10 o'clock came, there's like an old man like breathing on me, like, honey, it's time to go. I'll punch him. You gotta get me out of here. Like, I can't do it.
I love that. An old man breathing on me. I'm like, I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah. And your I could literally smell the alcohol on him. And I'm like, I have no desire to like be in bars and like stay out late anymore. But I didn't towards the end of my drinking. Like, I wanted that stuff to end. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to be home. You know, there was like a full shift. I'm much happier, like being home, hanging out with my kid. But it's just different. And like I said, it meant a lot for my friend to invite me on the boat and to be like, yeah, you're always a good time. And then after it was over, I was like, I'm telling everybody, I was like, guys, it was such like a low key day. It was very low key. And I'm like, has it always been low key? And I was the problem. Like, was it just me? Was it just me that was like the turn up queen? Maybe it was because it low key. And I was so worried about it. They drank casually and didn't get super drunk. And I'm like, maybe it was just me. I'm not sure. I still don't know the answer to that. Maybe they toned down for me, but I think it was just me. But it's cool to have people still want to include you. And I, in the beginning, I did struggle with that. I was like, my friends aren't including me now, but they didn't know how to include me. Trying to have some of that inner workings to like be forgiving of me being angry at them when they didn't know what they were doing. Yeah. I didn't know what I needed from them. I think that's the place that I'm at right now, where I'm just trying to like understand those relationships and how they moved and what apologies I might owe or what I'm looking for from them. I cut ties with a lot of people. I needed to, though. You know, I'm sure it was the same for you. It's like, I needed to figure this out on my own. And I also, in the end, I felt like I was pouring so much into my friendships. Like, I was like, you're having a bad day. Let me do A, B, C, and D. Meanwhile, I was deep in this depression and not saying a ton about it, just muddling through. So I think I was mad that people didn't see it, but like, you gotta say something. I'm now in this place where I'm like internalizing and really trying to figure out some of those relationships and where things went wrong, and voicing what I need from people is definitely a place that I'm at now. Like, I'm putting up my boundaries, I'm saying what I'm not comfortable with, I'm saying when somebody upsets me or when I don't like something.
I love that. I'm wondering about your mom. Where is she now with her alcohol use? Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, not at all. She still is active in her drinking.
How does that impact your sobriety, or does it impact your sobriety?
I think since I went through Al-Anon and really, I mean, I was serious about trying to just fix that, because I would get so angry at her. It's like so angry. And now I don't. I've noticed that when I'm open with her, you know, she lives in another state too, so I don't see her all the time, but she's respecting my boundaries of not calling me when she's drinking. I think when she's aware there's times where I don't think that she's necessarily aware that she is slurring her words or that she is at that level.
But it's like, Mom, I know you've been drinking.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to say like, okay, Mom, you're repeating yourself. Goodbye. So now I just know like, okay, Mom, okay, you repeated yourself. I gotta go. And I just cut it. And she understands it. You know, our relationship has gotten a lot better. But I just try to just focus on myself. You know, I hope that someday she wants to make some positive changes for herself. She's got to want to do that when she's ready to. I think me quitting has been inspirational to her, and that's not why I've done it. But I'm hoping that I'm showing her too that like you could still be the life of the party. She raised the life of the party. I'm still the life of the party. Yep. I just don't drink anymore.
I love that, and that's an important message. Like you are still you, but just I think better. Yeah. Like. Better version.
It takes a little while to get to the point where like you want to be the life of the party, but like I'm here now, and like you can still be the exact same person, and you're not embarrassing yourself or blacking out or fighting with your friends or your boyfriend or whoever. Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, Nicole, my final question for you, and I like to ask all my guests this: what is the greatest thing that you've done or that you're doing to protect your sobriety?
I think continuing therapy has been really good, and just trying to understand the background on why I was drinking and what I was trying to numb myself from. Trying to do that deep dive into yourself, into why it was happening, how you can cope better. Just every day trying to learn more about who I am, what's going to make me better. That's pretty much it. Just trying to continue to learn more ways to cope, because I know there's going to be more things in life that are going to be
curveballs.
And knowing better ways to handle them.
I mean, you've overcome so much in your life. I have too. And I'm like, okay, if I did that using a depressive substance that fueled my depression, what can I do not with a depressive substance, right? Like, how can I go through the emotion, process, feel uncomfortable, feel like crap in the moment, but then understand that no feeling is permanent. It's all temporary.
Yeah. You know, I had a girlfriend that went through a really bad domestic violence thing kind of right before I quit drinking. And that was really hard for everybody. Even things like in the world, like the abortion thing, it eats at you and it's overwhelming. Trying to find like a positive way to make some type of an impact. So based on that, after my friend's domestic thing, there was always so many things that I could do to be helpful to her. At some point, I was like, okay, how can I channel this? There's an organization here called Haven's House, which is a women's shelter for women and children, you know, dealing with domestic violence. And we did this huge, like, toy drive, and I got all kinds of people to donate, and I did this great, big, huge thing early in my sobriety, and it made me feel like I was making some type of an impact. Instead of crying, instead of being mad, instead of bashing the ex-husband, I found a positive way to do that. I also have, like, traumatic things with foster care, because I was in foster care, literally, it was probably 2 days, but it was a huge traumatic thing in my life. So now I found an organization that does things for foster kids, and I'm donating my time. So I think that that's been part of it too. Like there are things that are triggering, there are hard things in life that come down that make you feel awful or things that you can't fix, right? But if you can find something, some positive way and some way that you can channel that and make something good come from it, it's been instrumental for me, because those are the things that normally just throw me off the deep end. And that's why I'm crying late at night or whatever it is. Try to like tell my daughter that too. Like, you know, when things are bothering you or if there's things that you're upset about, try to find like an organization that deals with it or some positive way that you can put yourself into it and make some type of a difference. So I'm hoping with any other curveballs that I have in life, I can find some way to channel it into giving back some type of positive energy.
There's power in the powerlessness of life. And everything you said just reminded me of the psalm or the adage from AA that people like to use. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, which ironically, my mom used to always read to me and say to me.
Oh, that's crazy.
And I grew up with it, not even knowing it was connected to AA. And here I am reciting that often because I can be a control freak. And I think feeling like you have no power is hopeless. And like that hopelessness can really eat away at you and cause you to want to numb and use.
I never, now that you just made that connection with the Serenity Prayer, like I never even put that together, but that's exactly what I'm trying to do. Like, I can't change these situations. What can I do? And let me do the things that I can do. So I love that you just said that, because that's totally like hand in hand. It's totally the same thing.
I was meant to tell you that.
I love that you said that.
A divine message that came from above. Like, literally, yes. I was supposed to tell you that. Because that's when you were speaking, I was just, like, thinking, reciting that in my head. I was like, yeah, like...
I'm so glad that you said that.
I do believe people can change. And I do think that you can change your life if you actually work on the things that are within your control. And, like, instead of being like, I don't have this or I don't have that, it's like, what can you create? How can you add more beauty into this world? And I love that you're helping your friend, even though it wasn't a situation that you personally went through. You helped her so much, and like, not through buying a bottle of vodka or being like, hey girl, let's just pour up and like forget our troubles. No, like, that never solves anything. I commend you for being such a strong friend and a supportive friend, and I'm glad that you're inspiring other people, like your mom, your daughter, your friend, and the sober community, because you inspire me. Like, I love your stories. I love when you post your reels. Definitely. Kudos to you, girl. And I really appreciate you sharing your story and being so vulnerable, because I know it's hard to talk about sobriety and talk about addiction and talk about family trauma and things that, like, we're still dealing with, right? Because there's no, like, end destination. This is a journey. Even though my mom is sober and I adore her and, like, our relationship is a lot better than in previous years, I think I still have a lot of pent-up resentment, if I'm being honest, that I need to work. Yeah,
and there's a lot of people that struggle with their own issues, but find the community in Al-Anon just a little bit different.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I really appreciate you for coming on. I love you so much. So Nicole is based in Buffalo, and she is at The Sober BFF, which is such a cute name. That's her handle on Instagram. So if anyone wants to go follow her, she makes amazing content, usually connected to sobriety and living your best sober life.
I have a quick request. Please leave a review for this podcast. It really will help my podcast grow so more people can discover my content. If you're listening to this and want to check out the video version of this episode and others, head over to my YouTube page, which is linked in the show notes below. Also, feel free to follow me on Instagram @ the_sober_butterfly. Thank you so much.